Blog Talk Radio.
This is Chief for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, welcome to Chief for Yourself. Great to have you with us today, no matter where you happen to be in the world at this moment. Today's topic is one that, we really haven't given a whole lot of time to, airtime on this program. We're going to remedy that right now. The topic is pain. Our guest on the program became a chronic pain sufferer when she developed a condition that grew out of a work-related injury years ago. Sarah Ann Shockley's life took a turn that you, the listener, might be experiencing right now with pain that inhibited her lifestyle and left her feeling isolated and alone. But she learned not only to deal with the pain, but also to learn from it and make positive lifestyle changes. Sarah Ann Shockley is the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. And Sarah, let's start by going back to the beginning of your pain journey. Talk about the strange-sounding condition you developed and how it affected your life then.
All right. Thanks, John. I'd be happy to do that. So in the fall of 2007, so it's been a little while now, I was diagnosed with something called thoracic outlet syndrome. And that is basically a structural collapse in the body between the clavicles, the collarbones, and the first rib. And what's difficult about that is that in that space between those two bone structures, you have a large muscle from the neck that goes through there, the scalene muscle, some nerve ganglia, major artery, and some veins. So there's a lot going through that already narrow space. And when it collapses, mine collapsed due to computer use, using a keyboard that was way too small. Some people have this happen that collapses in an impact, like a car accident. But when it collapses, all those things, the muscles, the nerves, the veins, are squeezed, effectively compressed. And it's extremely painful. It's very debilitating. It can be. I had a very severe version of it. Usually people get it on one side or the other of their body, and usually it affects one of those areas more than another. I had it on both sides. I still have it. And it affected all of those things that I mentioned, the muscles, the nerves, and the arteries. So it involves a lot of nerve pain that goes into the neck, the arms, and the hands, and eventually goes throughout the body, and shooting pains and migraines, and the list of symptoms goes on and on. So basically what happened was overnight my life virtually stopped. I had to stop working. At its very worst, at its most acute, I was walking kind of bent forward a little bit. I could barely stand up straight, could only drive a couple minutes at a time, was just kind of stumbling through life, barely functioning. Mm-hmm. It was pretty intense.
Yeah. I'm curious about your office setup at the time. Were you doing a repetitive action that was not really ergonomically friendly?
Yeah, no, that's a good thing to mention so people can be aware. I was working for a private individual, so I did not have a setup that was ergonomically, you know, nobody seemed to know how that should work. And I was working on not only a laptop, but a mini laptop computer. And I'm almost 6 feet tall. So that meant that the top of my body was crunching inward every time I worked. And I used the computer quite a bit during the day. So, and it took several years. I mean, it doesn't come on overnight. It's something that takes time to come on. But it's important for listeners to be aware. My neurologist says that this condition, which we shortened to TOS, is becoming much more prevalent because of our overuse of computers. So to just be aware of taking breaks for your body, standing up, walking around, trying to, you know, look up online on how to make an ergonomic workstation, make sure you've got one, pull your shoulders back, don't let them crunch in. So it's important to be aware of it, the possibility, because once it comes on severely, it is extremely hard to undo. It doesn't lend itself to chiropractic or it doesn't sort of pop back out. It's very difficult to work with.
Just for giggles, I'm wondering, did the office take any steps to remedy the problem?
Yes. As soon as I felt pain in my hands, I went to my boss and asked to actually see a physician because I understood that it could be repetitive stress. I didn't know what it was. And he suggested instead using a more ergonomic keyboard, which actually turned out to be probably not a very good idea. I should have just stopped right then. But I complied with that, and we got a keyboard that basically let my hands be farther apart, was larger. But within a few weeks after that, it came in full-blown, and I had to just stop everything. So, yeah, just if anything starts hurting in your hands or your arms, you get tingly feelings or numbness, go see someone, neurologist that might be able to help you.
Now, what would you say to someone who is in that environment, a similar environment, if they're forced to make those kinds of motions, see a boss, try to get it taken care of, go outside, or how would you, what would you recommend?
I would definitely report it immediately. If you have any kind of tingling in your fingers or any kind of difficulty, absolutely, so you can get somebody to help you with it, because this kind of thing, if it's not stopped early on, can go to a place where it's almost irreversible. Mine is considered irreversible. I'm hoping that I will still be able to come through it, but I've been in it 11 years now. So if you're actually feeling pain when you're working, I would definitely report it and go see someone who's knowledgeable about it. But just as if you happen to be somebody who works on the computer a lot and you're not feeling pain, always go outside, always take a walk, you know, give yourself a break every so often. And watch your posture so that you're really taking care of your body. It's so important.
You did look to pharmaceuticals in the early going. I guess you didn't get much relief from those?
Yeah, no, for me, I'm not somebody who tends to want to use those, although I had an emergency appendectomy a few years ago in the middle of all this, and I was delighted to have the drugs when I needed them. But in terms of, you know, ongoing, I don't tend to use them, but I did try them for this as part of my healing process and to show that I was willing to heal, too. It's kind of one of the things you do during your disability process, too. And I tried, I think, 3 different nerve medications. And for me, I'm also really sensitive. They put the pain at kind of a distance, but they didn't really take care of it, and they came with some really unpleasant side effects like nausea and extreme spaciness, which you can't have if you're a single mom and you've got to drive and take care of somebody, and insomnia and other things that just in my migraines got worse. So the side effects were just so not livable, and it didn't help. And for me, in my condition, I came to understand, too, that pain was something that was trying to guide me, because I think this may be true for many people. It's not that you can't take pain medications to kind of mitigate that and bring it down, but I found that pain was also useful in that it told me directly when I was going too far. You know, in my condition, the pain shoots up to the roof if I am too tense. If I am using my arms in a way that isn't good for the condition, that's squeezing it more. So the pain was feedback that it was really useful for me, even though I didn't like it. It was important for me to stay in touch with it so that I didn't keep making the condition worse.
In the book, you write about your prognosis, and I guess the doctors were not really optimistic about the outlook. A neurologist, I think it was, that said things would never get better.
Yeah, I had several doctors, and that was after about the first year of living with it that I finally was told, you know, this isn't going to get better. And that was, wow, that was like a dead weight, you know, fall on you. Because when you first meet something, anything in life, I think for a lot of us, we think it's just going to get better. You know, we're going to get over it, the body's going to heal, and we just carry on, we do the best we can. Sometimes we try to even muscle through it and push through it. Sometimes that works, and sometimes that's counterproductive. And for me, after it was about the first year, I had to come to terms with that, oh, wow, you know, they're telling me I'm going to have this for the rest of my life, and it could get progressively worse. And I was already so limited, I thought, wow, how am I going to live with that? And that can absolutely, you know, you start out with something, and it's not chronic pain at first, it's just pain. Not just like minimizing it, but it's something you think is going to end. Mm-hmm. And there's some point, 3 months, 6 months, however long it is into it, that somebody tells you or you begin to realize this is not going away, and it becomes what we call chronic pain. And that's when it really begins to get incredibly difficult in terms of feeling depression, feeling hopeless, feeling that, you know, I've already done everything that I could to heal this and nothing's making it better. And you can really face an incredible wall of despair. And sure, this is something that if you haven't lived in pain and you're not necessarily around people in pain, you may not realize that we're dealing with much more than just the physical aspects of our pain. We're dealing with all these other things that come with it, like the hopelessness and the loneliness. There's a lot of isolation in living with pain and a sense that you're really in it on your own.
Yeah. Doctors have a way of using timetables, especially when they tell you you only have so much time left. How do you feel about that practice? Should they modify that, do away with it? How does that make you feel?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that doctors, it's really important to understand the weight of their words and how much authority they have. We kind of make doctors into sort of demigods and goddesses in our lives. You know, we really count what they say very, very strongly. And I think doctors need to be extremely aware of how their words affect a patient, that we take what they say as truth. And so, yeah, I think that you know, it's important to let people know that things may not be getting better real soon. We may have to work on this a while, but to give a span of time like that can be counterproductive. I think it takes away hope, and hope is part of healing, you know, and we don't want, I know people have this idea about false hope, but hope is so important to have some kind of idea that I can get through this. I can, you know, come to the other side, and maybe I can't come completely out of pain. Maybe that's not what's going to happen for me, but at least maybe I can ease it. Maybe I can learn to live with it in a way that's more positive. Maybe I can still find well-being in that, which is very hard, I admit, and yet it's our challenge. When we're living with pain, it's kind of a challenge to find our path through it and re-engage with life, stay engaged with life, stay engaged with ourselves. And we kind of almost have to work against what sometimes the doctors announce is true, you know. So yeah, I agree, it might be, you know, something to consider, maybe not making quite so strong pronouncements about how things are going to be.
Our guest on this Chi for Yourself is Sarah Ann Shockley, author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. This might cause our listener to do a kind of a double take, but I really like this approach. It's getting in touch with the pain rather than resisting it or paying attention to it with what you call kindness and understanding. Could you talk more about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. You know, when we first are in pain, the first reaction we have is usually to fight it. We want to end it. It's obviously really unpleasant. And I've begun to realize we live in a culture where our pain paradigm is very negative. Pain is considered bad, negative, a mistake, a failure, a problem. It's so pervasive that we don't question that. We just say pain is bad. So when we meet something that is painful, whether it's emotional pain or physical pain, the first response is to fight it, you know, to push it away, to get rid of it, because it's bad. And I learned over time that, you know, that didn't work for me. It made my pain much worse to be in kind of a fighting stance. It makes your body very tense. It's exhausting to constantly be fighting something that you can't win the battle with, because pain's going to stay if it needs, you know, it's, yes, you can use medications and do whatever you can to mitigate it. But if it's there, fighting it isn't always a response that's going to help heal. So I learned the hard way that for me, a more positive approach was to, instead of pushing against or turning away in denial, was to kind of turn towards the pain, just something we're absolutely taught not to do, and to kind of approach it in a sense and, you know, and ask it, what are you doing here? And what are you here for? And to understand pain is a messenger. Pain is part of our body talking to us. Pain is not an enemy. It's something trying to heal. It's something trying to get our attention. And the attention that we usually give to pain and that we usually give to the body parts that are hurt is to be kind of angry, to be feeling like it's taking over, like it's an enemy, like it's an invader. And yet it's the part of us that's hurting, asking for us to heal it, to care for it, take care of it. So I started to think of pain in a different way, as a signal from myself to myself, as a part of me asking for a different kind of attention. So, and that was when I began to think about how could I be with pain maybe in a softer way? Could I, instead of pushing against it, which actually seemed to make it worse and almost hold it in place, I kind of release that pushing and begin to just be with it. And again, this is very counterintuitive. We're taught not to be with pain. We're taught not to talk about it, not to show it, not to share it, not to, you know, complain about it. Just pretend it's not there and somehow it'll go away. And yet that doesn't seem to be working for many people. We're in pain for a long, long time. So I have found that, in a sense, turning toward the pain with kindness, really, asking, what do you need? What will it take to heal? What are you asking for? And kind of releasing some of that tension that has physiological effects as well as psychological and emotional, because you're relaxing. You're letting go of that clamping down thing that we do on pain where we try to stop it and contract it. We often hold our breath while we're in pain, so, you know, or try to keep our breath really shallow and not breathe too deeply into it. We don't want to give pain anything. We don't want to give it breath. We don't want to give it space. We don't want it to be there. And that seems like a, you know, it's a very natural response because of the way we think about pain. But if we can imagine that pain is the part of us trying to heal, then we can maybe relax around it a little bit, give it a little more room to breathe, and ask it what it needs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what it's asking for is exactly what we're not giving it, which is to kind of pull back from that fighting stance, relax a bit more, take time. It may not, you know, you may not be able to be out of it tomorrow, but pushing, trying to muscle through it seems to actually make it take longer. So just being kinder, kinder to pain and kinder to ourselves in pain.
Mm-hmm. And you're right that along with anger comes isolation. How was your dealing with isolation? Did you have a lot of well-meaning people around you, or did you feel lonely through it? How'd that go?
Yeah, it's a kind of a paradox, because you can have people around you that are quite lovely and wonderful and still feel horribly alone in your pain. Because pain is something that it almost builds up its own world around it. When you're in, especially if the pain is very acute or it's long term, you feel it doesn't just stay in your knee or your neck or your head. It seems to permeate your whole experience of yourself and of life. The rest of your body starts to feel worse and worse the longer you're in pain. You're quite exhausted, usually sleep deprived, so you feel kind of zombie-esque. So you feel kind of like you're living in your own world of pain, even if there's people around you. And this is what creates this awful sense of loneliness and isolation, part of it. And then we also tend to, even if there's wonderful people, you withdraw usually when you're in pain. You're kind of, it's hard to participate because you're in pain. And sometimes your physical condition, like mine does, limits the ability you have to use your body. It can be very embarrassing to be in pain around people. You can feel very ashamed of yourself because you can't do what they want you to be able to do. People who aren't in pain, it's hard for them to understand how pervasive this is, how much it affects the whole person, and how exhausting it is. So, you know, you might want to go do something with people and they expect you to be able to stay as long as you always used to stay. And maybe you can stay 10 minutes and then they get kind of, you know, annoyed with you. Maybe you're going someplace, like I had trouble carrying my own plate of food. That was really embarrassing for me. You know, it's hard to keep asking people, could you carry this? Could you open that door? Could you pull my chair out? You feel like you have to ask for everything. And I certainly had some friends that were quite wonderful and understood, and they, without being asked, would do those things. They would carry things for me. They would open the door. You know, that made life a lot easier so I could participate sometimes. But a lot of times that gets really tiring for the person to always ask for help. And people get tired of us being in pain. They want us to hurry up and get better. And sometimes I think it's also part of our pain culture, because we don't believe that pain should be here. Hard for us to believe that it does stay for years and years. So sometimes people get annoyed with us for not healing faster, and how can you be in pain that long, and aren't you trying hard enough? So all of that adds to the sense of isolation. So kind of a mixed bag where you have, I had wonderful people around me, but also you've still got this sense of not being part of life in the way you used to be.
Yeah.
Hard.
I also like that you write about pain's effect on the sufferer's esteem, and you've blogged about the importance of finding someone to tell your pain story to. Do you like the idea of a sort of encounter group, I guess we'll call it, for pain sufferers?
You know, I have mixed thoughts about that. I never went to one. I didn't, you know, this seems strange, but I didn't feel well enough to go to a group. And I think that might be true for many people. You know, when you're in intense pain, you can barely stumble through a day. So getting out of bed, taking a shower could take most, you know, about half of your day's energy, if not most of it, for the day. And I was a single mom, and just that's all I had energy for, was trying to kind of take care of myself minimally and just get my son to school and then be there at, after school. And that was it. I had to even go to the school and say, please don't send homework, because I can't help them with it. I can't, you know, I don't have any of the reserves. I'm exhausted. And they were great, and they did. They stopped, you know, but it's very hard. So the idea of getting in the car and driving someplace and going and talking about my pain with other people in pain wasn't attractive to me, even though it sounds like a good idea. So for me, I didn't participate in those. I'm sure they're probably helpful for some people. I think what worked for me was to find a particular person to talk to, a friend who could listen to my story. And by talking about the story, I mean not, you know, it's not like you, when you list your symptoms, you go to the doctor. That's not what I'm talking about. That usually makes you feel worse, actually. And I'm not talking about a pity party, or we always know about people that talk about their pain too much, you know.
Right.
But I'm talking about, I think what's needed for somebody who's in long-term pain and deep pain is to really be heard and really seen just as they are without somebody asking them to be different. So I recommend asking somebody you trust. Could be somebody you're close to. Could be somebody, a family member that you don't know that well, but you know they've been through pain, and they will probably have more compassion or some compassion for you. But to ask somebody to just listen quietly and not interrupt, and just kind of like in a sense witness and hold the space so you can talk about how hard it is. We aren't, most of us in pain aren't encouraged to talk about it, not in a real way, not in a way that allows us to express all these other aspects we've just been talking about, the emotional pain that comes with it, the loneliness, all of the incredible stresses, the fears. I mean, there's a lot that goes with being in pain that we don't talk about. And to have somebody just sit and listen and not offer any advice, not try to fix it, just let the person be where they are and just say, you know, wow, that sounds really difficult. Mm-hmm. And maybe cry if they feel like crying, but just be there. And that, I think we avoid that because we're afraid it's gonna be bad for the person in pain because they shouldn't talk about it or it'll make it worse. But in fact, quite the opposite is true. We need to be heard. We need to be seen. We need to be acknowledged. Everybody does, whether it's physical pain or it's emotional pain. It's really important to be able to express it. That does help it kind of relax and move on a little bit.
Where are you now? If there is such a thing as a pain spectrum or a rating system, where are you now after all these years on the pain spectrum?
I don't know how to say that because I've always hated that 1 to 10 pain scale. I think a lot of people
I didn't want to do that, but I get it.
So, yeah. It's just so, what does that mean, you know? And I remember saying, yeah, I'm very stoic, so I would say, well, I'm probably at a 7 or an 8. And one of my doctors said, Sarah, you've been at a 10 since I've met you. I'm like, what? You know, and beyond, like 13 or 15.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? I don't know. But I can say that having come through extremely acute pain, in which I was hardly able to do anything, and then working with a lot of the things that we've talked about, the things I talk about in the book, I've in the last couple of years, I've been able to. I'm living within my limits for sure. There's that, but also all of the things about feeling better about myself, even while I'm still in pain, has made a huge difference in my sense of well-being. my acute pain levels have come down. I wouldn't have been able to have a conversation like this a couple of years ago. I would have been done in like 5 minutes in terms of the amount of energy I had and brain power and ability to focus was just not there. So it's definitely gotten a lot better, but I'm still in it. I'm not out of the woods. I'm still, you know, having to live with TOS. I still have to be very careful about how much I do in a day. I still have to ask people to carry things for me and to do things for me. So I'm still in it, and I know a lot of listeners are in that situation where, you know, the healing aspect of what we're doing is really about how can we find well-being even while we're still in this long journey of living with pain. Some of us maybe can't look forward to an immediate reprieve from it, but we can find ways to live with it more positively, with more hope for ourselves. You know, how do you find out who you are still inside there, even while you're in pain? Mm-hmm. You know, and I would advise, you know, encourage listeners to not wait for pain to end to reengage with their lives. You know, you're still who you are, even in the pain. So to find ways to do things that you can enjoy, even if they're much smaller than they used to be. And then you have to find new ways to find enjoyment in life, but to find ways to reengage with yourself and with life, even while you're walking with pain.
Right. One last question, and we'll finish up. What is the most important thing you've learned about all of this experience?
Boy, there's so many things. I think that it's so important to step back from that battlefield that we make with pain, and to understand that pain, in a strange way, is wanting to teach us something. It's wanting to guide us. It's asking for something. So to kind of treat it as what ways am I being asked to change? What do I need to do? What do I need to let go of? What do I need to shift in my life? A lot of times when we approach pain, we approach it the same way we approach everything else, which in our culture is, you know, goal setting and get through it and muscle on and carry mm-hmm. on and rah-rah mm-hmm. and hurry up and let's go, come on, we're going to go to the top, you know, that kind of thing we do when we're with business or we're in school or whatever, you know, keep going, don't stop. And I think that one of the biggest things I've learned is that that doesn't seem to be the most healing way to be with pain or with any condition we're working with. That kind of approach of muscling through and carrying on regardless and pushing through doesn't seem to be what the body's asking for. So to kind of begin to tune into your own body rather than someone else's timetable for when you should heal, just let go of all that and say, wow, it's going to take the time it takes. And to be with what's right here now. And rather than hating it and pushing against it and fighting it, we don't go to the other end of giving up, but we go to that place of, okay, how can I work with this? How can I be with what's here right now? How can I be with who I am right here now and still express myself as me, even as I'm going through on this very difficult path? So pain, you know, the pain experience can be a path. In a strange way, it's a spiritual path. Because it forces you to find who you really are. It forces you, you could go through it without ever doing this, but it's sort of asking you to go into your deepest self and find out who you are. Find your reserves of strength, find your inner resources, and find that self that is eternal in there, that is still the same. Even while you're living with pain, who is that person in there, and to really draw that forth and not to allow pain to take over everything, but say, pain, you're with me, but I'm here too. So let's walk together on this path.
Sarah's website is thepaincompanion.com. When you're there, read the blog posts too. They're very, very helpful. The book is The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain, from Sarah Ann Shockley. Sarah, thanks for being on with us today and for turning your pain into such a helpful tool for sufferers and for anyone who will find themselves in that life of pain. So I'll just say, come back and talk to us again.
You're welcome.
I really enjoy that.
Thank you.
Sarah Ann Shockley, and we, of course, will connect to Sarah's website, link to her website at chieforyourself.com. I always like to remind you when you're there to leave your email address in that little box that's at the top of the page. We'll make sure you get all of the blog posts from Genulines, a lot of information in those, and also all the news on guest information, who's going to be on and when. So thank you, too, for all of the likes and follows and all that good stuff. Always very appreciated. And I think that's going to just about do it for today. So as I like to say, be well, thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.